This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. One of the traumatic aspects of having a loved one with Alzheimer's disease is deciding whether to put him or her in a home. If you decide on a home, the next problem is finding a good one. Most nursing homes are designed for people with physical disabilities, but many people with Alzheimer's disease don't have physical disabilities. In fact, they hate sitting still and like to wander, which can be considered quite a nuisance in a nursing home. My guests are two of the people who have created a new model in the design of residential homes for people with moderately advanced Alzheimer's disease. It's called Woodside Place. It's located in a suburb of Pittsburgh. It was the subject of an article by Malcolm Gladwell in a recent edition of The New Yorker devoted to thinking about the future. Beth Dealey is the director of Alzheimer's disease programs for Presbyterian Senior Care, which runs Woodside Place. David Hoagland was the principal architect of Woodside and other homes for people with AD. He's with the firm Perkins Eastman Architects. He told me about designing safe places for people with Alzheimer's disease to wander.
We felt it was very important that the wandering behavior have some purpose to it, that it be focused around finding activities. So the building is planned and designed so that there are interesting activity places. There's a TV room, a music room, country kitchens that are open where there's coffee and cookies being baked, so that while they're wandering around, they're engaged. We also felt it important to combine the opportunity for wandering or walking around in the inside the building with outdoor space. And I think that's one of the key things about Woodside Place and other models is the freedom for the residents to wander both inside and outside in a secure way, and that there are courtyards and a wandering garden that are enclosed with fences and things so that it's a safe type of wandering.
You said that you didn't want to build a psychiatric racetrack for the residents to wander in. What did you mean by that?
Well, there are many older models and sometimes even built currently where the corridor just makes one big circle racetrack. And so residents can wander in a continuous loop so they're not getting lost. But the difficulty is that there's no engagement. There's no activity. There's no purpose. It is purely focused on the ability to just keep moving. And again, we really felt it important that there be activities to engage them, that there be natural light that came in and that they could see outside, that they could understand the time of day, the time of season, the weather changes, and relate back so that there was a cycle to their life and that there was a relationship between the inside and the outside.
Beth, you watch residents. What are some of your observations?
Well, one thing we know from the research done at Woodside is that we have a creation of a very rich social life, first at an individual level because of the interaction that we see with others, and then also at a complex level. We see a lot of sustained relationships at that level, and then finally at the functioning of a community. We have a real community at Woodside where residents sometimes just, they take care of each other. They communicate even on a non-communicative basis with each other just beautifully.
Now, there are three houses in the center that we're talking about, Woodside Place, and each house has 12 residents, so there's a total of only 36 residents in the whole facility. Then there's common areas as well as these, you know, three individual houses. I understand that it's patterned in part on a traditional Pennsylvania Shaker village. Is that right?
Yes, we looked for prototypes. As architects, we like to look at examples. And we looked at some of the Shaker communities and things where people lived in a collective or a collaborative way, which was really a model of Woodside and wanting to create a community but maintain each person's individuality and also to try to create the sense of a family unit. So the three houses of 12 gave us the opportunity to create that family unit, but then the sense of community. So much like some of the Pennsylvania architecture Shaker communities where the housing is kind of connected to the barn, is kind of connected to other community spaces, we use that as a model to design the building.
Are you using the simplicity of the Shaker Village too?
To some degree, the interiors of the building is based on that, and that all of the resident rooms have plate shelves so that they can display things and have peg rails so that they can hang things on them. We don't hang the chairs on the walls, but we do hang other things that are familiar to residents so that it helps to personalize their room. We also use Dutch doors at the entrances to all the residents' rooms with the hope that we could close the bottom half, maybe discourage some wandering into other people's rooms because they could actually see into them. And then at the same time, hopefully they would also recognize their room as they're going down the hallway because there would be personal items on display.
Beth, in your experience, what are some of the best visual cues that you can give people with Alzheimer's disease to let them know this is their room?
I'll tell you, one of the best visual cues is having staff that are consistent and same, caring, loving staff. I think they make the biggest difference in helping the residents know where they are, where they need to be. As far as the environment goes, it is very individualistic. Some of our residents respond very well to pictures of themselves at younger ages, not current pictures, but younger ages. And that seems to be a nice cueing direction for people. Other people respond to the color. Some people respond to, we have quilts in the different houses at Woodside, and some people respond to the different quilts. It's so individualistic. And the idea of an environment is to create it as flexible and as creatively as possible so that you meet the needs of all people.
We tried very hard on the issue of cueing to try to do it with the environment in many different ways. We did things like one side of the corridor having fabric wall covering and the other side having vinyl wall covering so it would feel different when you touched it. We used, in the hallways where you walk, we used carpeting on one side and a ceramic tile border on the other so that it would feel different when you walked. We've been really unable to test how many of those ideas have worked for people, but I think what we have discovered is that it is so different for each person, so that for one person the color works, for another the quilt theme might work, and for someone else the photograph outside the room may be the key important issue.
Beth, what are some of the things that people with Alzheimer's disease find most threatening that you try to eliminate from the environment?
I think one of the most upsetting things for residents with dementia is when people don't know who they are as individuals. If they don't know what their life history is, if they don't know that, for instance, Mr. Smith was an engineer or a plumber and liked to work on the sink, and instead people get real upset when Mr. Smith is working on the sink, when that's what he did all his life. I think that staff who is very well knowledgeable about working with people with this disease and about the life history of these folks, then I think that that can get rid of, in essence, a lot of the behavioral challenges.
We've also worked very hard to make the environment as, on one hand, as calm as possible so that there isn't a lot of background noise that may be misinterpreted, that the wall coverings don't have patterns that might look like faces or eyes staring at them, that there aren't things on the floor that look like things that should be picked up off the floor, so that we try to remove those kinds of issues for people so that what comes through in the information to them are the more interesting things to engage them in the activities. This is always a catch-22 because on one hand we want it to be common soothing, but we also don't want it to be boring. And so it's always a challenge on this issue of each of the individuals offering them as much stimulation as they can handle, but not make the environment so banal that it's so uninteresting and they're so unengaged in it.
Tell me how you deal with bathrooms at Woodside Place. I mean, people have to be able to find them. People with very little memory have to be able to find them, and they need to have privacy so that other people aren't walking in and out while they're in the process. So how have you dealt with this, David?
Well, I'll start and Beth can add in. I think this is probably one of the single areas that we have explored as we've moved past Woodside and other designs to really challenge this issue. Woodside is arranged such that it's primarily private rooms, and each room has a powder room, a toilet and a sink in each room. And then in the public areas, there are public bathrooms as well. What we learned from Woodside was that while it was nice that each person had their own bathroom, was that what we didn't do correctly was make it visible from the bed so that if people woke up during the middle of the night, maybe the recall of seeing the toilet, the visual connection to that would remind them maybe perhaps why they woke up. So what we have done in more recent designs is to provide a design that allows from the bed to be able to see into the bathroom, but from the hallway to maintain that person's dignity by making sure that it's screened so that anybody walking down the hallway cannot see in, because it's entirely realistic to expect that some people may not remember to close the door. And we're always looking to try to balance privacy and dignity for people, even if they may not be totally aware of it themselves.
Beth, anything you want to add about that?
Well, the thing I'd like to add is that some people with this illness, they'll sort of go wherever. And I like to challenge the architects to try to find how we can do rooms perhaps that have corners that are impermeable or impenetrable to urine, or make rooms that don't have any corners.
Wait, do you have a problem with people urinating in the corners of rooms?
Yes, we occasionally do.
And David, how have you responded to that problem?
That may be one of those problems we can't solve. What we do try to be careful of, though, is to make sure that the design does not encourage it any more than possible. So we're always very careful about, and for instance, a good example, cabinet heaters that typically sit under windows as a form of heating. For people who don't understand what that is, may think that that's actually a toilet. So we have, with our heating systems, design systems so that they're not low cabinets that look like something else. Waste cans, things like that, that again may be misinterpreted, are all part of being as careful as we can with the design and the operations.
You worked on these plans for Woodside Place, and you know, hoping it would really answer the special needs of people with Alzheimer's disease. You've had what, 6 or 7 years to actually watch people with the disease function at the center, and I'm interested what you've learned by watching people functioning within the plans that you came up with.
Well, we learned quite a deal, and we have worked on a number of facilities since then that have opened. We learned things such as that 12 people in a house was maybe too many people. It was hard on the staffing side, sometimes led to issues. So in some of our more current designs, we've looked at households that are closer to maybe 10 people. We learned that the front door is a very important place for people with dementia. They love to sit and watch at Woodside, and you can watch out the windows and watch people walk down the sidewalk and come to the front door. And that can then be very distracting and agitating because the doors are locked and people are trying to get in, they're trying to get out. So in our more recent designs, we've worked it so that the front entrance is really almost invisible to the residents inside the environment, but visible to people who are obviously coming to the building.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Beth Dealey, Director of Alzheimer's Disease Programs for Presbyterian Senior Care in Western Pennsylvania, and she directed the development of Woodside Place for people with Alzheimer's disease. David Hoagland is an architect who is the principal designer of Woodside Place, as well as a number of other assisted living residences for people with Alzheimer's disease. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about innovative approaches to designing assisted living residences for people with Alzheimer's disease. Beth Dealey is the director of Alzheimer's Disease Programs for Presbyterian Senior Care in Western Pennsylvania. She directed the development of Woodside Place for people with Alzheimer's disease, and it's won several awards for its innovative approach. David Hoagland is an architect who is the principal designer for Woodside Place and a number of other assisted living residences for people with Alzheimer's disease. I'm sure what a lot of people are wondering is, how much does it cost, and does Medicare or health insurance cover the cost for the people at your facility at Woodside?
No, unfortunately, we do not get Medicare or Medicaid funding within Woodside at this point. However, we are exploring some of that, and Woodside costs less than a traditional nursing home, and that was always our goal, to be below costs of nursing home, because the majority of people at Woodside, if they were not at Woodside, would be most likely in a nursing home.
So
we also care for a number of people at Woodside who are low-income elderly people, and that's just because of our mission.
Mm-hmm. What do you do to keep the prices down?
Oh, well, we don't have the intense medical care that, or medical model, I should say, that perhaps a nursing home would. We don't have all that technology. We are just a simple place that hopefully allows people to do what they want to do. We enter into the world of the person with Alzheimer's disease or other dementias rather than inflicting our reality upon them. We don't have the high costs associated with that. The majority of our costs are direct care providers, because we have a 1-to-5 ratio throughout most of the day. So that's how we do it. And I think Woodside has shown that this can be done, that we can have models of care that are less expensive than the traditional nursing homes, but can create a better quality of life for people with this illness.
So you don't have doctors in the residence. What happens if one of the residents gets sick? Where do they go?
Well, the doctors come into Woodside. We try not to have the resident go to the doctors unless it's as a family's request, because it can be very disturbing for the resident to go to a doctor's office, as you can imagine, when you have such severe brain disease.
The other thing from the cost standpoint is the building itself. By not having to follow the regulations of a nursing home, we did not have to build as much square footage. For instance, instead of a nursing home, which requires 8-foot-wide hallways, we only did 5.5-foot-wide hallways. We did not have to put in a nurse call system because it's not a nursing home, and we also knew this population wouldn't really be able to use it. So there were savings on the construction and design side that I think contributed in part to trying to look for a model that was less the medical model and also less expensive.
Now, you've both traveled around the world looking at the designs of other centers for people with Alzheimer's disease. What are some of the things that you learned about what went right and what went wrong around the world?
Well, I'll start. I spent a great deal of time in Northern Europe looking at Swedish and Danish models, and was very impressed by their ability to do smaller scale residences and facilities, even to the point that they would rent just a 4-bedroom apartment and provide services for people with dementia or for older frail adults, integrated in the community. They also had many models that were of the scale of Woodside Place, where they were providing special programs. So I think I was very interested and very encouraged by the ability to watch in Sweden and Denmark, the ability to create these small models, that they did not have to be following the traditional models that, you know, every nursing home has to be 100 beds or every housing project has to have 150 units.
Mm-hmm. Beth?
I would agree with that, too. When I went to Australia and England, the idea of a home-like place, personalized setting, that allows people to move about safely. But what we learned mostly, I think, in the countries that I visited was the philosophy of care and how important it is to, as the Beatles song is, almost to like let it be. You know, if when people at Woodside, when they get up when they want to get up, they go to bed when they want to go to bed. We serve meals at the times that you or I would eat, but if somebody doesn't want to eat at that time for whatever reason, that's okay. Our kitchen's, you know, 24 hours. Food is a big part of our life, and it is a big part of the lives of people that we care for. So this type of philosophy that includes individualization and tries to maximize that versus a regimentation that you might see in other care settings, I think is one of the reasons that you see and hear so much about Woodside.
What if somebody's already eaten lunch and they forgot they ate it and they go to the kitchen and they want to eat lunch again?
Oh, my gosh, certainly they can eat lunch again. Sometimes at Woodside, we serve 5 breakfasts before lunchtime. Because if somebody's up at 2 a.m. because they're ready to go to work, because they were always working, let's say, at night their whole lives, we might help them get breakfast, and then they're hungry again, give them breakfast, or they've forgotten that they've had breakfast. I mean, we're not going to argue with them that they haven't. I mean, that's why they're there, that they can't remember that they. So they might have something else. And because our kitchen is located right at Woodside, we can prepare meals that the residents would eat. For instance, many of our folks at Woodside wouldn't eat things like raisin toast because the raisins would be perceived as bugs. Or parsley would be perceived as grass, so we can't, put that kind of thing on the plate. Some of our residents at Woodside won't eat stew because it's just too complicated and they don't understand it enough to want to eat it. So we might have to break up the components of stew for people.
David, have you found that more new institutions are interested in creating innovative approaches to dealing with people with dementia?
Yes. I think one of the most satisfying things about Woodside Place is the mark that it's left on this industry, the interest that it has attracted from architects in creating models that don't follow the old examples. I think the other thing that has changed is that the perception of people who are making decisions for their family members, we're looking at a generation now which have quite different expectations than perhaps the older generation that we're placing. So the children are looking at facilities and saying, this isn't a place I want mom in, and it's certainly not a place for me. So we're seeing the market really change the way we look at senior housing and long-term care. We're finding more interest in residential environments. We're finding more interest in all private room facilities and not sharing rooms. We're finding interest in private bathrooms. Those are things that the market is telling us that they want. And it's gratifying to see that happening at all levels.
Do you have any recommendations for someone who's looking for an innovative facility for somebody who has Alzheimer's disease? How to find one in their area?
Well, I would recommend that the families explore through their local Alzheimer's Association. If they don't have a local Alzheimer's Association, then I suggest they call the Chicago, which is the national-based Alzheimer's Association. And those are the people that should have a handle on their own communities and knowing which facilities are available.
Beth Dealey is the director of Alzheimer's disease programs for Presbyterian Senior Care, which runs Woodside Place, which is located in a suburb of Pittsburgh. David Hoagland was the principal designer of Woodside Place. He's with the architectural firm Perkins Eastman Architects. We'll close this half hour with a duet recorded in the mid-30s featuring French violinist Stefan Grappelli and gypsy guitarist Django Reinhardt. Stefan Grappelli died yesterday at the age of 89. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.